Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gorgeous George and Coz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Sunday night for your Monday morning delivery. Excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts. UFC 289 took place this past weekend. We're definitely going to go over that. And PFL's started their next wave of events as well. It's PFL 4 under the 2023 regular season, whatever they want to call themselves, I forget. But either way, some shocking stuff went down in Atlanta, Georgia. On top of that, the latest news, gossip, rumors, whatever you want to say, whatever you want to call it, we're here to talk about it. We're going to reset, and then we'll be right back to start the show. All right, Goes, a pretty historical card took place in Vancouver, Canada this past Saturday. Actually, yesterday. And in the main event, Amanda Nunes defeated Irene Aldana. So from Aldana's side, she was trying to become the fourth Mexican fighter to become a UFC champion. Active, too, by the way. As you all know, Brandon Moreno, who fights next month against Alexander Pantoja. Alexa Grasso, who I believe is going to be set to fight in a rematch against Valentina Shevchenko. And Yair Rodriguez, same card as Moreno, also fighting against Alexander Volkanovski. They're all active champions. Yair Rodriguez is an interim, but he still gets pay-per-view points. He still has a belt, and he still goes down in the books. So they have three champions. She was trying to become the fourth, except she went up against the buzzsaw that is Amanda Nunes. You know, Amanda Nunes, goes for the most part, has been a buzzsaw, right? Just jacking fools up. Earlier in her career, before she was a champ, you know, she had to sort a few things out, a couple of close calls, a loss to Kat Zingano, but for the most part, she's had quite a stellar career, right? And so I think unfairly, because she looked so awful against Juliana Pena a few years ago, we act like, oh, which Amanda Nunes is going to show up, when in reality, most of the time, the buzzsaw showing up, and only the one time we can really remember, because Zingano was such a long time ago, that was a whole different Amanda Nunes. She was really more known as the former Strikeforce veteran coming over from Strikeforce versus the established UFC bantamweight, right? Oh my gosh, she just dismantled Irene Aldana. And a little bit of that and a little bit of Irene Aldana just didn't show up.
I'm Natalie Imbruglia today because I am torn. That card, going into it, I was very upset. I just didn't feel like I'm getting the same product that I'm used to paying. I'm paying the same amount of money, but I'm not getting the same product. As I was sitting there, I was having fun watching a lot of these fights. Then at the end, the last two fights, they just didn't really, I don't know, I made everything fall like a little flat or something. And we'll get to the co-main event eventually, but I guess we'll start here with the main event. It was just Amanda Nunes, and I know this is going to sound stupid because she does this to a lot of fighters, but it was just her beating on another girl for 25 minutes. But my problem was this. Irene Aldana just, it looked like the varsity versus the junior varsity. And there's been fights before where Aldana maybe just doesn't look as sharp as before. But this was something different. This was just like, it was like deer in the headlights. She just wasn't firing. She wasn't doing it. And it's not like she tasted Nunes's power early and was like, whoa, you know, I don't want to look foolish out here. She landed a big shot early on in that fight. You know,
well, it was at the end of round one, though. It was at the end
of round one. Yeah, but it's still one of five rounds. You know, something that you can go back to the stool and go, hey, look, I landed. I connect. I can hit this girl. I can do something. Something to be motivated off of.
Yeah.
She just didn't do anything. And Amanda Nunes, you could tell, wasn't even going 100% because early on, she was getting that takedown so ridiculously easily. You know, it was just like throwing a little kid on the floor that you feel like Amanda probably could have done that all night and just beat her up, and she didn't. So it was a weird matchup, man. But I mean, Amanda Nunes did Amanda Nunes. That's what she does. Aldana, it kind of had that same feel of Pennington a little bit, but not exactly, where you feel like Pennington gave everything she had. It just wasn't anywhere near enough. Here it feels like you feel like Aldana just didn't give everything she had. It was the oddest thing.
Deer in the headlights. And yes, those takedowns, man, just pulling on her front leg, and it really looked like an embedded her playing with her daughter Reagan when it came to the takedowns. Like, I just expected her to then jump on top of her and tickle her belly, you know. Irene Aldana would get up pretty quickly. It seemed like Nunes almost didn't want to follow up because she wanted her back on her feet, but she wanted to plant it in her head. It's there when I want it. And Aldana had a heavy front leg presence, and that leg got battered pretty bad. When she threw her punches, it was only a straight right cross and an occasional left hook. And like you said, there was a pretty vicious one at the end of round one, but she just would not let go. There wasn't enough to gain Nunes's respect to score points and impress judges should it be a close round. And Nunes just threw an arsenal at her, whether it was lead elbows, lead in elbows, kicks to the calf, kicks to the head, kicks to the body. That front kick right up the middle was really, really nice. And then all the punches that she could possibly throw at her, you know, and Aldana just took them. She was a human piñata.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's a shame, too, because if you look at her game, there were quite a few people. It didn't happen until more towards the end of the week that were actually picking her to win the fight. I was one of them. Towards the end, I was looking at things that I thought she could have done. And I thought that was the punch she was going to end it with, that big punch that she hit Nunes with in round one. I thought that was the punch that she was going to land that was going to end the fight. It just didn't happen. But, I mean, people that I respect with great opinions, other fighters that were picking her, there were reasons that she was there and why you would pick her. But she just shit the bed. She just did not show up. And I don't know if you saw, but she kind of released a statement. Did you read that, George, on Instagram?
Something about, like, this will never happen again. I already realized my mistakes, blah, blah, blah.
I couldn't hate on it, man. I read it, and I was like, that's kind of what I want to hear. There's not much I can pick at here. Just it's going to be hard to trust somebody like that again, you know, in that situation on a card like that. She's going to really have to show us in the next fight that she's fixed that. And that's happened before with other fighters. Like, look at a fighter like Charles Oliveira, right? In the co-main event, he was down in the dumps in his career at one point, and he was able to turn around and win a world title. So it can happen.
Even the most vicious guy we've seen in a long time, Francis Ngannou, you know, he shit the bed against Miocic with his cardio. And then in his next fight, he was horrific against Derek Lewis. And Derek Lewis was horrific against Francis Ngannou. So, but, you know, then all of a sudden he came back and started smashing. So I guess I'll give Irene Aldana that. But she has to understand, all we can do is grade her on what we saw. And what we saw was a D-, maybe just the actual F itself. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a poor performance.
And the thing is, where she might catch a break is, well, there's only about 10 bantamweights that can maybe fight for a title in the next 2-3 years, depending on where you are, right? Because it takes time to put these fights together. It seems like there's a bantamweight title fight every, you know, twice a year, or in this case, I think it was last year in July when Amanda beat Juliana Pena. So really 11 months went by. And Nunes won't be there. So Aldana, should she right the ship? Well, at least we know she's not going up against Nunes. And I don't think she's going to go up against someone that's a killer like Nunes. No disrespect to the other ladies, just everyone's level down. We all lose because of Nunes' departure. Especially Juliana Pena. She's really pissed off. She felt like that was a big fight that needed to happen. And it would have been a trilogy fight, despite whatever you may feel about, you know, their two fights, which I've been very vocal about. I think Pena got lucky and just caught Nunes sleeping. I think Nunes probably got lazy and didn't train. And the reason I say that is because fight number two showed me that. And that's why I wasn't interested in an immediate rematch. So this was supposed to be UFC 289 with Pena. She hurt her ribs. She didn't show. I don't understand why she's very, very pissed at Amanda Nunes. Amanda Nunes, in the post-fight press conference, talked about damage to her legs, nerve damage to her legs that she has been suffering from, not just in fights, but in practice. Every time she's kicking, she feels it. So the body's breaking down. She made a promise to her mom. Her mom didn't want her to do it anymore. And look, she's basically beaten everybody, including Pena and Pennington. Now, one could say, well, her and Pena should have settled the trilogy. One could say that, but she just wasn't interested in it. And again, if you cite health concerns, you know, like nerve damage in your legs, I mean, you know, and you have money and you have a beautiful little daughter that you want to spend time with and another one on the way, you know, I tip my hat, man. I was disappointed on fight night, but I tip my hat. No.
I don't know. It's really, really tough to have an opinion on this sort of thing, because we're not privy to these conversations or, you know, what doctors are saying. But I would say that if you're having this nerve problem, you shouldn't have fought this last fight. You know, that should be enough to scare you off from doing that. So if on top of having that problem, she was still able to put together this last camp and have a fight and look that good, I would say it's more of a concern, maybe, you know, than it is something more serious than that. To me, I feel like there's still some money to be made for her, especially with her family getting bigger now and things like inflation going on. Like, I don't know. I just feel like you only have a small window to make this money. Mm-hmm. And she's a fighter that is just so much better than everyone else that I feel like I'm not saying, you know, sign another 5-year deal or anything like that, but, you know, one or two more, I think, could make a huge difference in your life. And I think she could have done it.
But if she's not into it, if her heart's not into it and she's citing injuries, isn't that enough?
I don't know. Did it look like her heart wasn't in it though? Like, she looked like she was having a blast out there.
I agree. On fight night, I was like, what are you doing? Don't retire, you know, because I thought settling the trilogy would be nice. And I thought there was some records that she could maybe catch, pass, set, whatever. Mm-hmm. But then I listened to that other interview and I thought, oh, wow, okay. I mean, nerve damage in your leg sounds like a pretty serious thing. You know, I don't know about if she's feeling the drop foot thing or what it could be. She didn't really go into details. Now, I will agree with you on one thing. She said that if this was the Pena fight and she beat Pena, she would have stayed for one more and beat Aldana because she wanted to beat everybody. But because Pena didn't show and this turned out to be Aldana, then she was willing to retire kind of in peace. And so then you're right. The naysayer in me would go, well, hold on a second. What about this leg damage, you know, or this nerve damage? Right. What about your heart's not into it, and what would you tell your mom? But I think maybe what she thought was, well, now I tick all the boxes. Mom's happy. no more training and hurting the leg, and I take out Aldana, so no one can ever say I ran from Aldana or nothing like that. And you know, so now that said, all this said goes, for some reason, I think she'll be back. I think what she needs is probably like, I think some time off, but it has to be the right scenario. And I think the only one that can provide that is if Valentina were like to win back the title and defend it like two or three times, and all of a sudden has all these title defenses, maybe that would kind of get on her nerves that, you know, this one has those records, I guess. That's one, and I think that's a long shot one. The other one is Peña's very vocal. Peña's really, really vocal, and she can play the heel very, very well.
She's going to get under her skin.
Peña can always say, I beat you, you know, and everybody might say that you didn't train for me or whatever, but I showed up, I beat you, I finished you, you ran away, you're scared, you know, whatever. Then maybe I could see maybe that being what could draw Nunes back along with a boatload of money, you know, especially if they went back to Brazil. Maybe that city that she said she's from, a neighboring city that's got a big arena. But I would say that at least a year will go by before that even possibly comes up, in my opinion.
I mean, she's top dog right now. She's the GOAT. And I feel like when you retire, that's when, you know, before when they tell you, hey, can you take out the trash? You go, oh, man, I've been training all day, making all this cheddar for this family. And you want me taking out the trash? That excuse ain't going to fly no more. And I think when those things start to pile on, that's when fighters start to go, oh, man, I need to get back into this. I need to get my clout, have people talk about me again. I see a lot of fighters talking about they can't wait to get back to family life and all that. But then once they do, they're just kind of like, man, I miss this. Kind of like Matt Brown, right? There's a way of finding a balance between both of them. Demetrius Johnson's really good at that too. I kind of agree with you. I think she will be back. Ditto on the reasons. I think Juliana Peña is just going to get under her skin. And if Juliana Peña goes on and wins the belt again, she's going to start talking. And I don't know. That's going to be hard to just kind of brush under the rug.
Yep. I guess as you were talking, I also thought about Kayla Harrison, who I know she's with the PFL. But apparently she can break free from a contract at the end of this year, free and clear. She has to do one fight or two. I can't remember, under that pay-per-view series that they have. And if she were to go there and become the darling, and let's just say that behind the scenes, everyone knew Amanda had her number, then maybe Amanda could come back and do something. That would require Kayla to do the Juliana script and become kind of like a heel, I guess. Maybe I could see that, man. But for now, like I say, I just wish her the best, and that's that. You know, who do you think might fight for the vacant title? Is it as easy as just Peña versus Pennington, since Aldana just had the shot?
It's pretty black and white. I mean, I think that's what you got to go with. I did want to ask you this, though. What about boxing? Could you ever see Amanda Nunes go, yeah, I got something for these girls in boxing and doing something like that? That doesn't really, I mean, it does involve your legs. Obviously, you got to stand, you got to train, but you're not taking leg kicks, you're not throwing leg kicks.
Right.
Did you ever see her do something like that?
Yes.
I think so too.
I'd see her do something like that. But again, I think it has to be worth the money. I think she has to be able to tell her mom, listen, man, this is a ridiculous amount. I've always wanted to do it. And maybe, cite what you said. I'm not messing with my legs, my ability to walk or whatever. I'm just going to be boxing. Yeah, I could see that as a possibility.
Moms are absolutely ruining MMA. They need to be stopped right now.
Yep. Mama Nurmi and Mama Nunes, both shutting down two great fighters. You know, one other thing too. At the watch along, thank you to all you that tuned in to our UFC 289 watch along, to all the watch alongs we've done, and hopefully to the next one, which is UFC 290 on July 8th International Fight Week, Volk versus Rodriguez, Marino versus Pantoja. At the watch along, I remember correcting her. She said, I tied Anderson Silva. And then today I started perusing the MMA sites, social media, and there's one of Juliana Pena. How dare you compare yourself to Anderson Silva and this and that and booing her. And so I was like, okay, just to make sure here, so I don't talk out of my ass, I got to go back and hear it, right? Because if she said I tied Anderson Silva for most championship wins, she's right. They both have 12. However, so meaning wins in championship fights. However, I went back and it was what I thought I heard on Saturday night. She said title defenses. She hasn't tied Anderson Silva in title defenses. She has 6 at bantamweight and 2 at featherweight. That's 8. Anderson had 10. But the difference between that is when she beat Pena the second time, it was a title fight. It just wasn't a title defense because Pena was the champion. Mm-hmm. So that's why that's considered a win in a title fight, but not a title defense. That's one thing. And then another thing is she said, I accomplished everything I wanted to accomplish. Now, again, this is me being super picky, right? She said, I accomplished everything there is to accomplish. And I was thinking, well, hang on a second. You probably will go down as the GOAT because of the head-to-head win versus Chris Cyborg. But Chris Cyborg's starting to build a little mini case for why you should maybe overlook that one fight, because she is adding to her greatness. Chris Cyborg only has 2 losses in her career. Amanda Nunes has 5. Chris Cyborg has 11 title defenses. Amanda Nunes only has 8. Chris Cyborg has more wins. Chris Cyborg has all those belts in all those different organizations. She's got the Invicta belt, the UFC belt, the Strikeforce belt, and the Bellator belt. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know if anyone will ever give it to her. But remember, if she beats Kat Zingano, she now creates what's called a round robin. Hey, I beat someone that beat you, even though you beat me, along with all my other accolades. You know, for some, that might work. For others, you might go, girl, you got iced by Amanda Nunes when you went head up. She's the GOAT. Who knows, right? But I'm just thinking the 11 title defenses would have been nice for Amanda Nunes, especially because, dude, let's face it, featherweight title defenses were like layups. You know what I mean? I'm just shocked that she didn't do a few more. The UFC has only got like 5 featherweights. By the way, I think they're going to do away with that weight class anyway. But it seemed like those were just layups. Like I think she really could have got to those 11. But then again, Cyborg doesn't look like she's slowing down anytime soon. So maybe Cyborg winds up with 15. Who knows? So that's all I was thinking was she doesn't have the most title defenses for females. And she never settled the trilogy with Pena. I guess that would be my only thing. She might not even have the most title defenses for UFC, just in the UFC. Because remember, Cyborg accumulated those through all those different organizations. Valentina stopped at 7. Amanda's at 8. Valentina can easily, well, not easily, but if she gets past Grasso, she might, you know, run off 2 or 3 more. And she could break that record. She's only 1 behind, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I thought about this today. And I can make an argument for both sides. But I think what's going to end up being a factor here is when we stop talking about Amanda Nunes and all there is just talk about Cyborg, she did it again. She did it again and again. You start to really think about that. But at the end of the day, man, there's just no better scoreboard than saying, yeah, but I knocked you out. When people said, hey, who's better? We settled it that night. I knocked you out. But the longer and longer Amanda Nunes stays away from the game, the more and more you start to overlook that a little bit. And you start looking at some of the things that Cyborg's done. And she's even adding boxing now to the mix. It's like, fuck, it's hard not to say Maybe combat sports overall. You could give it to Cyborg. I don't know, man. Especially like if she just
completely with the judo, MMA, and pro wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just
but she got socked up too by Amanda Nunes. But then if Amanda Nunes is gonna go, I socked you up, then Juliana Peña is gonna go, well, I socked you up, even though she submitted her. But I think what would be cool for Cyborg, and this is what I wanted her to do, no disrespect to Bellator, I kind of wanted her to go to PFL. I don't know if she would have enjoyed the 4 weight cuts, and I don't know if she could have just fought Kayla, but if somehow she could have wound up with a PFL belt to add to those other 4, that's amazing, especially if one of the skins on the wall turns out to be Kayla. And the other one, Larissa Pacheco? Holy cow, like now Cyborg's not messing around, like, you know what I mean? I think she'd get more support.
Possibly. It's really interesting when you think about it. But, I think legacy-wise, she's going to be fine. Because when you do that little Mount Rushmore, right, for women, she's going to basically look to the left and the right and say, I smashed all of these girls, pretty much. You know, so that's just hard to overlook.
I got one more for you. What if Kat Zingano smashes Cyborg? She will have smashed Nunes and Cyborg. Well, not smashed, but won. Well, I guess whatever, won, you know. Like, she'd have a little bit of bragging rights. Although Rousey would go, well, I kind of smashed you. But anyway. Yeah. Actually, she'd have the Misha Tate bragging rights, the Cyborg bragging rights, and the Nunes bragging rights. That'd be pretty amazing. But
it would be.
Anyways, that was the main event. That was, like I say, pretty historical, her retiring and looking great on the way out. And, it kind of saved the card in a way, because we thought the co-main event would make us forget how terrible the card was on paper. Although, we'll get to that as well, because everybody that was under the co-main event and the main event, they showed up for work and they actually added value. And we got to give them their props along the way. So they bailed out the matchmakers, Dana White, Hunter Campbell, from the card that they built out in Vancouver, Canada. After so many years, they haven't been back to Canada. You only came with 11 fights. And yes, I know some stuff fell apart, but either way, it just wasn't juicy. It wasn't a juicy card on paper. Benil Dariush lost to Charles Oliveira. Early on, it was looking good for Benil Dariush. He was inside of Charles's guard. He never really got going with any sort of ground and pound the way Charles did to Dariush. It all happened in one round. It was quick. I really thought this had a potential fight of the year candidate written all over it. And although it was good, it wasn't great.
Yeah, it was an odd feeling, because I mean, what more do you want, right? The fight had a finish to it. There was a little bit of back and forth, but it just kind of left you scratching your head a little bit. It was weird. Dariush was on his way to winning that round pretty comfortably. Mm-hmm. He went to the ground with Charles Oliveira, where most people would say that's the last place I want to end up.
Mm-hmm.
But he has gut check time, you know, and Oliveira was able to turn things around and kind of started everything off with a kick that he landed early in the fight. And the weird thing is, like, Benil blocked both of them. I think he threw it 3 times. I think he blocked all 3. But the force behind it is just so much that it was the beginning of the end. And Charles Oliveira, that's the thing, man. The dude has evolved throughout the years. You know, he's a decent striker now. He's got a great ground game. Yes, he can be submitted from time to time. That is kind of weird. But I'd love to see them do this down the road another time. But, I mean, we got finality to it. I guess maybe part of what made people feel a little weird is, in a way, there was kind of a side plot going on. And I think it was kind of the good guy, bad guy, you know, and you just kind of feel like the UFC got one over on everyone. Mm-hmm. Because you have this guy, Benil Dariush, who, man, is just one of the nicest human beings you will ever come across. And where normally people would get a title shot, this dude probably did double, if not triple, some of the other fighters have done, and didn't get his shot. And at the end of the day, he's not going to get his shot. And that kind of sucks. So maybe that's part of the sour taste in people's mouths.
I agree. 8-fight win streak out the window. Oliveira should have been someone he fought after he won the title, if he won the title, but he deserved a title shot against Islam Makhachev, and he doesn't get one. Islam Makhachev, you know, he didn't fight a row of killers before he got to the title shot. He had the benefit of a good record and being Habib's boy and timing, and, you know, he rose to the occasion and he beat Oliveira. Now Oliveira wants another shot, saying, it wasn't me, it wasn't the real me. Well, it should have been, fool, because now you're not guaranteed, although Dana White's warm to it, but you're not guaranteed. I see that BMF fight carrying a little bit of weight. Makhachev, to be fair, has not beaten Poirier or Gaethje. His predecessor, Khabib Nurmagomedov, he beat both of them, but this new champion hasn't. And both Poirier and Gaethje, I think, are probably bigger draws than Oliveira. I might be wrong. Oliveira's a star. He's a star, you know? But for sure, I have a feeling Poirier, at least, will draw better than Oliveira. So we'll see. Poirier's got to get past Gaethje. Makhachev's not set to defend until the third week in October in Abu Dhabi. So we'll see. We'll see how this plays out.
Weird scenario, because it would be a fresh matchup, which is good, right?
Yeah.
That always makes things interesting. You have to go back and you have to look at Charles Oliveira's fight with Islam Makhachev. It wasn't that interesting. You know, there wasn't anything that really made you go, let's do it again. You didn't have that feeling. So it was weird that Dana was so hip to it, because Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier, they're going to come at each other. They're going to hurt each other bad. And people are going to be on their feet, and they're going to love it. And both guys are pretty damn good when you give them a mic. I just feel like that momentum could change very easily. So one thing that could maybe factor in all this is money. You know, if the right guy says the right thing or the guy says the wrong thing, maybe they're out and the other guy's in. But I really feel like one of the two fighters, whoever it may be, whether it's Justin Gaethje or Dustin Poirier, kind of holds a couple cards here coming up in this BMF fight. Now, the question is, what do you do with a BMF? Like, a BMF title would probably look good on a poster, right? On the other side, the real title. I'm sure the UFC would love that and love to promote that. But then at the end of the day, like, what happens? You know, if Islam beats one of them two cats, is he the BMF now? Like, do we have to run the BMF again? Like, I don't really get how the BMF works.
Yeah, I don't think the BMF would be at stake. I think it's just its own entity when it's convenient for the UFC. And of course, the fighters like it because it comes with some perks, as Justin Gaethje revealed. But there is one other option at play here. Alexander Volkanovski, if he beats Yair Rodriguez, he wants to fight Makhachev again. Now, he left us with a taste in our mouths of, hey, I wouldn't mind seeing them run it back again. Oliveira didn't leave us that taste when he lost to Makhachev, but when Volkanovski lost to him, we were like, that wasn't bad, Volkanovski. And so I also wouldn't mind seeing them run it back again. But he's the champion in another weight class. He has to tend to that weight class, which is what he's doing here. So let's see. Let's see if he can get past Yair Rodriguez. So far, he's been pretty dominant in the UFC, never lost in the UFC. Well, I think he just lost to Makhachev. But in the featherweight division, he hasn't lost in the UFC. But that's another guy to keep an eye on. But see, there you go. That's why I think Poirier and Gaethje might have some preferential treatment, because that would be a fresh matchup for Makhachev. Makhachev beat Oliveira to win the title and then defended against Volkanovski. That would be, you know, rematches.
Yeah.
Okay. The rest of the card was as follows. Mike Malott defeated Adam Fugit. Dan Ige defeated Nate Landwehr. And Marc-Andre Barriault defeated Eric Anders. Ige and Barriault both went to judges' decisions, and they were unanimous. The Barriault and Andrews fight was really entertaining. They got fight of the night, by the way, so they got $50,000 each. Ige just clowned Landwehr. Landwehr just didn't look anywhere near the Landwehr that had started to, you know, show us that maybe he not only belonged in the UFC, but he deserved the fight, like Dan Ige. I mean, Dan Ige, he didn't look terrible. Fugit, you know, he wasn't bad. I was actually kind of impressed by him. He had some decent moments, but Malott looks like the truth for Canada. He looks like he could be a star for Canada. He got a nice submission choke, but he had some nice strikes too.
Was that the fight where, as he was walking out, the people? So when we were doing our watch along, we got a video of that, and it had seemed at first like it was only one person, but I saw a video later. It was a lot of people that fell, man, and they almost fell right on him. That is some scary shit, dude.
The railing fell off, and a few people fell, and some people fell off. No serious injuries, but yeah, that could have, you know, if there was deaths or whatever, who knows what could have happened. But for sure, at least that fight could have been postponed a little bit. You know what I mean? Until they sorted it all out. But it was during the walkout of Malott versus Fugit.
So, I imagine it's the arena, right? That is held liable for something like that.
Yeah. They've already apologized. They said there was no serious injuries. I think maybe everyone is going to be okay, but you know how it is. You get home, my neck hurts, mm-hmm. my back hurts, who knows? I don't know what it's like in Canada. I don't know if they had to sign anything then, you know. Hey, I feel good. Okay, let me just sign something, get out of here, or you know, we'll see.
I mean, it happens, right? Like car accidents, right? People don't really feel it until like the next day. But there's got to be, and especially when you get home and people start talking, getting in your ear, you know, you could do this, that sort of thing.
Correct. Yeah. We'll see what happens with that. Okay. Let's see here. Let's get to the prelims. The prelims, I'll go through them and then you can chime in on whatever you like. Let's leave Chris Curtis and Nasruddin Imavov off to the side. That one ended in a no contest. We had an accidental clash of heads. But Jasmine Jasuda Vicious defeated Miranda Maverick. Ayman Zahabi defeated Ari Chilong. Kyle Nelson defeated Blake Builder. Steve Ursig defeated David Dvorak. Diana Belvita defeated Maria Oliveira. You know, there was some big upsets goes in these prelims. Mm-hmm. And the Canadians in the prelims went 3-0. Sorry. Yeah, 3-0. And then overall, I think they went 5-0. So huge night for Canada, man.
Very. But you know, the one thing that did stand out for me was you're used to having these Canadian cards and having a Canadian in the main event, right? Like mm-hmm. George St. Pierre for the longest time held that flag. And then, you know, even guys like Rory McDonald or whatever. I thought it was kind of sad that we didn't have somebody there at the very end to end the night, because that crowd is always so passionate and they love their fighters. And I thought that was a little changing of the guard of sorts. And it happens, you know, like look at Brazil. It was a while when Brazil felt like it was falling off the map, and then their champions started to come back a little bit too. So it's ups and downs, but mm-hmm. I did kind of miss having a big Canadian name at the end.
Yeah. They just don't have that superstar right now. I mean, I think Hakeem Duwadu is Canadian. He was going to be on this card against Lucas Almeida, but Duwadu had to withdraw. But yeah, even with him, we just didn't have the main eventer. Steven Thompson versus Michelle Pajeda. That one's been rescheduled. Chris Daukaus versus Khalil Roundtree. Daukaus suffered an injury, so. You know, I think we somehow could have got to 13 or 14 fights, but either way, it just wasn't pay-per-view worthy for me. But look, they knocked it out of the park, man. They had 17,628 in attendance. The gate was 3,834,000. So they did good on that end. And like I say, they had some really, really great upsets early on. Canadians went undefeated. We did have one unfortunate ending. Nasruddin Imavov in round two collided heads with Chris Curtis. Now, Chris Curtis, he threw a big right hand that kind of almost brought Nasruddin Imavov into him a little bit. I'm not saying he caused it or anything, but nobody really was here. Nobody was to blame here, is what I'm trying to say. And let me set the stage. Imavov won round one pretty clearly. I don't think anyone, including Chris Curtis, would dispute that. And in round two, it looked like another healthy serving of Imavov, maybe cruising to another 10-9. Now, that said, there was still 3 minutes left when this took place. Anything can happen in 3 minutes. And with Chris Curtis's punching power, you know, you never know. If he comes back and wins that round, then wins the third, it's a whole other story, right? Of course, Chris Curtis is coming off a close fight or a butting of the heads with Kelvin Gastelum, messed him up, and he lost a decision there, you know. So really, this butting of the heads has really, really messed him up. Now, while they separated the two, Jason Herzog told Chris Curtis, hey, look, this wasn't intentional. This will probably be a no contest. I think he even told him that. He goes, but I need to know from you, are you ready to go? And I think part of the reason was Chris Curtis was telling the doctor, I can't see, but just let this clear up. And that's one thing you just can't say. I can't see. You can ask for all the time you want. They'll find a way to give you the 5 minutes between timeouts. You go to your corner, let the doctor come in. You know, they'll figure out times, figure out ways to give you time, but you just can't say, I can't see. So Chris Curtis was saying, just give me like a minute, give me 2 minutes. I'll be ready to go. He was saying it loud and clear so we could all hear it. And in reality, at this point, he could have, knowing that it would go to a no contest, just taken that way out, you know, knowing that this fight's not going your way, just say, yeah, man, I can't see. That's it. No one would give him any blame because it was a really nasty cut right above the eye, right below the eyebrow, in a spot where, you know, it can impact, A, your ability to see at that moment, and B, as soon as you get hit, no matter where, how much they clean it up, it's probably going to, you know, affect you. But it looked like he really wanted to rally and do it. In the end, I think when Herzog gave him some additional time, as he starts to walk back, he hears him tell the doctor again, I can't see. And then boom, he just waited. He got that point. He goes, I can't let you go out there. Of course, Chris Curtis can't win because there's still people calling him a pussy or whatever online. And he, you know, it's easy to go stay offline, but he just loves to go online. And, so I think he's been in there maybe, you know, getting an earful from people. But I think he should just hold his head up high. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt that we don't know how the fight would have resulted. We really don't. We can just tell you what we saw up until then.
I can admit that we are close to Chris Curtis. And I don't want to sound like a homer, but I know the guy. He's not that type of guy. He really isn't. Like, if he could have fought, he would have fought. The problem with the injury is it was bad already, but it's asking to get worse. I mean, where it's at is just a horrible place, and it could have gotten way, way worse. In the end, yeah, I mean, this is probably the best thing that could have happened to Chris, that fight was not really going his way. But he's just not that type of guy to run away from things. He didn't run away. He wasn't acting. You know, he didn't need an Oscar. It wasn't that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I don't know if they'll rebook them together. I don't know, you know, if he'll just fight someone else or what. But and I don't know if the UFC is going to take care of them, both of them, by sending them a little bit of money each, because they both get their show, but neither one gets the win. The UFC doesn't have to pay him. We might. We don't know. And, of course, Curtis, I think, really felt like he was robbed a little bit down in Miami and against Kelvin Gastelum. But like he told us, hey, look, I can make set 170 one day, or for now I'm a 185-er. But that night, man, he really looked small compared to Nasruddin Imavov.
A little bit, yeah. He's going to have to make that decision soon.
He's kind of like a tweener, honestly, just too big for welterweight and not big enough for middleweight. But, again, he didn't take the L, so maybe they just give him another matchup, and then we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. All right, now here are the bonuses for the card. I already gave one away. The fight of the night went to Eric Anders and Marc-Andre Barriault. The performance of the night went to Charles Oliveira, Mike Malott, and Steven Usyk. Okay, so let me just get this out. They gave 5 bonuses, 50,000. I'm happy about that. Mm-hmm. I feel like every finisher should get it at this point. That would make me happy too. And so who got left out? In this case, it would be, I guess, Zahavi. And that was a really, really nice punch that he landed. And then the follow-ups, you know, he blasted him, man, in 1 minute. And then let's see here. Other than that, I guess that would be the only guy that got left out. Wait, did I say that right? Yeah, Ursig got his. Why did Ursig get one? Yeah, Ursig got one, and he wasn't even a finisher, and he got one. So Eamon Zahavi should be like, what the fuck? You know, like, why didn't I get one? I finished. Mm-hmm. But he didn't. Okay. So right now people are going, well, George, what's your problem? They gave an extra bonus. Isn't that what you want? Yes. But just 1 week ago at Albazi versus Kaikar France, Dana White was asked, who'd you give the bonuses to? He goes, how could you not give it to Caceres and Pineda? Those guys fought their asses off. And I agree with Dana White. They did. They deserve a fight of the night. And then he said, and you got to get one to Miller. After all these years, as long as he's been doing it, 40th time he's made the walk, 25 wins in the UFC. That punch was beautiful. We had to give it to him. And I agree with Dana White, right? All right, Miller gets his. And then they said, and of course, Nemov, he showed up on late notice against Malarkey. How could we not give him one? He looked good. He took out a tough guy. He was the biggest underdog on the card. And so that was it, because we had to give one to Pineda and Caceres. And so the way he was talking, it was almost like, and as you know, we only give 4 out here in the UFC, which of course they don't, because they've given out 8 or 9. He couldn't even say, well, it was a fight night, maybe on a pay-per-view. No, he's actually done it on fight nights where he goes either all the finishers. It's just whatever fucking mood this guy wants to be in where he does it. Because Karin Silva had a beautiful knee bar against Ketlin Souza. Right? One that we rarely see. Man, that chick could have used 50 G's. That was a beautiful submission. Mm-hmm. Now, what he says is, as you know, we'll take care of these fighters. Well, we've asked a fighter recently, did you get taken care of? You know, because you had a pretty nice finish. I think it was like 2 years ago or a year ago or something like that. He said, I didn't. Sounded like he didn't even get a $10,000 check, you know, or an iPad or nothing. Like, he didn't get nothing. No 50, no 10, nothing. That's what it sounded like to me. And it's just that those little bullshit sessions that he gives us. You know, I got to offer each of these fighters 3 fights a year. Bitch, no, you don't. No fight. Rarely is a fighter fighting 3 times a year. You know, you don't even have, you got 800 fighters. You don't even have enough spaces to ask every fighter to fight 3 times a year. You know what I mean? So it's just those little things that make me mad. And because it happens every week, again, I'm happy that 5 people got it. But I'm pissed that Eamon Zahavi didn't get one. Should have been 6, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they got the money. That's for sure. They got the money.
I don't know if they need to maybe restructure the way they do bonuses or what. Like, part of me starting not to care anymore, only because at the end of the day, it is a bonus. They can do whatever the hell they want. It just doesn't make much sense the way they do it. I think you need to and it's not even really the bonus structure that bothers me, man. I think it's the base pay that bothers me more than the bonus structure. I think that should be raised.
Well, I think I talked to Sean when I was talking to Sean Sheehan recently for our other show, Triple G Show on Patreon. I told him, okay, you know, Kaikar France, he went home without a win bonus. Amir Albazi got his win bonus. And basically, a lot of people are saying, including Israel Adesanya, Chris Lee cost Kaikar France his win bonus, you know? But, you know, Sean was saying, well, if that's the way he saw it, that's the way he saw it. But if he gives that round to Kaikar France, he's costing Amir Albazi his win bonus. And as he said it goes, a little light turned on. And I thought, I waited for Sean to finish, and then I said, Sean, I just thought of something. If the UFC thinks enough of you, that they give you your first headline, which is a fight night. A lot of fighters love these coveted spots where they finally get the headline of fight night. And I believe that was the first one for both Kai Car France and Amir Albazi. Now I'm talking really slow because I want to check, because I know Kai Car France fought Brandon Moreno for the interim title. I just want to make sure he wasn't the main event. That was UFC 277. And he wasn't. Okay. That was Nunes versus Pena. Okay. So that was the first time they both got the headline. If you're the UFC and you're telling them, hey guys, I need you to go 25 minutes, five rounds. This is a headline. We're putting you on the poster. We think the world of you or whatever. Well, then why not guarantee their pay? In this instance, instead of getting 100 and 100, just show up, man, because we think the world of you. You're going to get your 200. You know what I mean? All of it up front. Now, if you lose, and next thing you know, the next card, you're a little bit more down on the card. You're back to your 100 and 100 or 120 to 120 or whatever it is. But for this one, for the fact that you're doing this for us, you guys are going to get your money up front. I think that would be great on the UFC's part if they would do that. I think that would send a statement. You know what I'm saying?
For main events, right?
For main events, yeah, on fight nights.
Well,
or maybe in the main card, I don't know, but main card is usually a title fight, and the opponent usually gets like 500 a show or something like that. So yeah, for fight nights, I'd love to see it. They were both making 100 and 100, so Albazi went home with 200,000, and Kai Car France only went home with 100. I think they should both just make 200 a show.
I don't hate that idea, and that's something that maybe a Francis Ngannou would have come in handy for something.
Fighter like advocacy. Right. Fighter advocacy. Because Dana White has stated it incentivizes them. I think he used to say that in the past. You know, we want these fighters to be incentivized, and so we dangle the win bonus out there, whatever. Well, you don't need to incentivize these two. These are two top flyweights that you thought so much of that you said, let's put them on a fight night, and you asked an extra two rounds out of each guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no one fights on behalf of the fighters, you know. Izzy says, let's up the bonuses. I don't know if he meant 60, 75, 100. I don't know what he meant, because he said the cost of inflation. I agree. It's been a while. They used to even be higher. There used to be four bonuses, and they used to be 60, 70, 75, 129, whatever. I think UFC 129 is where they maxed out, and then they brought them back to 50. And they made them for all the fight nights, all the cards or whatever. But Izzy's right. Inflation and the company's making money. I say either give them all finishers bonuses or give everybody 60,000, I guess. Now they may refrain from giving everyone that finishes a bonus and just stick to their four. I could see them fighting back that way. But at least they'd each get 60,000, you know. But I don't know. Something needs to improve. I just think look, I'm almost talking against myself, because this is one thing I've said in the past, and that is because none of these fighters, when they stand on their own, they have leverage. The UFC doesn't have to give them jack shit. All right. What do I mean by that? If Israel Adesanya right now said, you know what, I'm disgusted, I'm not going to fight for a while, here's the title. Dude, do you think the UFC is going to miss a beat? Hell no. McGregor hasn't fought in 2 years, and they're not missing a beat, right? John Jones didn't fight for 3 years, didn't miss a beat. They cut Ngannou, not missing a beat. Rousey, Lesnar, all those big Khabib. Players. You know what I mean? Who?
Khabib.
Cejudo gone for 3 years, you know? They don't miss a beat. They won the game. The UFC, those three letters, are more powerful than any one fighter by themselves. But there is no UFC if all the fighters walk out, except all the fighters won't walk out because it's too difficult for them. This is a worldwide sport. They won't do it. It's that would be too impossible to organize. It's not even worth talking about. And the UFC knows it. That's why Dana White sometimes even boldly says, if they want to do an association, go ahead, or a union, go ahead. He knows they won't. He knows that there'll be enough that won't do it, because now's the time and they want to get paid and fighters are selfish. So some sort of advocacy would be nice. But the thing is the UFC, I wish they would realize that maybe Israel walking out doesn't hurt you. But there's a lot of fighters like Israel before him, him, and after him, and others like him that allowed you to be a company that made a profit of $400 million last year and is worth $13 billion. Without them, you don't have that. You have to recognize and you have to reward it. Maybe you can find a way to stay away from NBA, MLB, NHL, and NFL, where the owners make 50% of the money and the players make 50% of the money. I agree with that. You can probably avoid that. But you compared yourself to the major four. And so, therefore, we've often compared you to the major four. And that's why we've always said, why do you pale in comparison? You know, I think some reports say the only fighter pay is only 18%, you know, which is well below 50-50. Now I'm hearing with the increased revenue and the money that they make that it's down to 12%. So, you know, there is some money for that company to spend on some fighters. And I think they could do it in a way where they appease all of them, because this Malott guy may be nothing right now, but like Go said, well, he didn't say this, but no one headlined Canada. I mean, you go back to Canada in 2 years, this Malott guy may be the next GSP. You don't know, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough cookie, man. I honestly think when it was Ngannou, Usman, and Adesanya as champ, that was a good shot of maybe doing something, you know, making some waves. But it's just at the end of the day, man, these guys are all going to look out for themselves.
Well, remember when they had Kennedy, Cerrone, GSP, Cain Velasquez? Wait, Kennedy, Cerrone, St. Pierre, Velasquez. Yeah, and I think two of the three were champs. One was an all-time great. The other ones were popular. And then all of a sudden they said the phone was ringing and some fighters were starting to kind of get on their side, and that fucking thing went away. But I thought that one had some legs, maybe. Yeah, just here we are. You know, here we are, 50,000. Five people got it. I'm happy. I'm just bummed out for Ayman Zahabi because he deserved it just as much as the other ones. Mm-hmm. We got to move on, though. Let's move on from this. Just a couple things here. Let's give PFL some love. These are the results. Jesus Pinedo from Peru defeated Brendan Loughnane in the main event. That's Loughnane's, not his first loss. He's 27-5, but his first time that he's been finished. He got waxed too, man. A knee and knee slash kick to the liver. I think it was all in one move. Followed up with some punches, put him out. Pinedo makes it to the playoffs. Movlid Kabulayev defeated Tyler Diamond. Martin Hamlet defeated Sam Kay. Bubba Jenkins defeated Sung Bin Jo. Josh Silvera defeated Delon Monte. Gabriel Braga retired Marlon Moraes. Ty Flores defeated Dan Spahn. Chris Wade defeated Ryoji Kudo. However, he got edged out by Pinedo's effort, so he's out of the playoffs. Impa Kasangane defeated Tim Caron. Andrew Sanchez defeated Taylor Johnson. Abigail Montes defeated Randy Hester. And Alexei Pergande defeated Akeem Bashir. I guess the big one, the big stuff here is Loughnane losing and Marias is retired again.
Yeah, that we talked about Beneil Dariush, right? And what a nice guy he is, what a good guy he is. Marlon Marias is another one of those guys, man. It's sad to see him go, but it's different than like what we're talking about with Amanda Nunes. Like with Marlon Moraes, he's a tough out, but he's not what he used to be. And I think it is time to go. It's sad to see great fighters go out that way, but I kind of liked what he said in his post-fight. Like, he's back home, you know? That's where he started, World Series of Fighting at the time. And he looked maybe not happy, but content. And so overall, I actually had a lot of fun watching this card. It was some good action, considering all the bad news PFL, all the bad press they've been getting. They needed something like this. This was a really interesting card, and that main event, man, I can't believe that happened. You know, he caught him flush though.
He sure did, yeah. And the PED scandal that they had really rocked the light heavyweight division. So wait till you hear the names that are advancing in the light heavyweight division due to the PED scandal that they had. We have Josh Silvera, who got 12 points. He got 2 first-round stoppages, so he's 2-0. Martin Hamlet got 9 points from his 2 fights. He went 2-0. Impa Kasanganai, he only went 1-0, goes, but he finished in the second round. He got 5 points. He's in. He only had to fight one regular season matchup, but he's in. Ty Flores fought 2 times and got 5 points. He's in as well. Those are the 4 that are in. Andrew Sanchez only fought once. He won. He got 3 points, but 3 points wasn't enough to get him in. And as you all know, some of the big names that the PFL lost this year because of the PED scandal are Rob Wilkinson, the defending champion, Thiago Santos, the coveted free agent signing, Will Fleury and Christoph Jocko. And Wilkinson and Santos fought each other. So did Fleury and Jocko. And who did you say?
No, I just said he was a big free agent.
Yeah. So those are some big names, and they're out. And these 4 advance in the light heavyweight division. Pretty crazy, isn't it?
Totally, yeah.
In the featherweight division, advancing are Bubba Jenkins, 2-0, 9 points. Gabriel Braga, 2-0, 9 points. Movlid Kabulayev, 2-0, 8 points. And Jesus Pinedo, who went 1-1, but he got the 6 points that he needed from that win over Brendan Lochnane in the first round. And so he's in. Chris Wade, who also had 6 points, he's out. He went 1-1, but he's out. So he must have lost the tiebreaker to Pinedo along the way. I know he lost to Bubba Jenkins in the first fight. So yeah, I don't know what happened here. Why he lost the tiebreaker. Brendan Lochnane, he got 5 points because he stopped Marlon Moraes, if you'll recall, with leg kicks in the second round, but he lost this fight. So 5 is not more than 6, but 6 and 6 are even. I gotta find out why Pinedo edged out Chris Wade, and that's, you know, the answer.
I don't know. That's a good question though.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and get it here before we wrap up. Let me see. Jesus Pinedo. Okay, so anyway, let's talk about real quick, and I'll look this up really, 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 really fast. Did you see Conor McGregor and Bernie, the Heat's mascot? So Conor McGregor was in Miami for game 4 of the Denver Nuggets against the Miami Heat. And I guess they were doing some little skit. He has an energy drink brand or something like that, supplement drink brand. They were doing some sort of a skit, and the skit just called for them to kind of goof off, and Conor was going to punch him. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Conor hit him so hard, he knocked him down, and then he had a follow-up punch. They dragged him out. It all looked like, looked like he went a little bit too far type feel to it. But it didn't look like, oh, man, Conor, you know, hates the guy. But apparently, this guy really did have to go to the hospital. Apparently, he's out and he's okay. But that damn McGregor, man, he just can't seem to, like, stay out of some sort of a controversy.
Mm-hmm. You got to put blame, I think, on both sides on this one. This has happened before. It happened with Deontay Wilder. Wilder's was way worse, way, way worse. Conor threw a missile, man. I mean, that was straight. I think what ends up happening is, there's an area that's completely free of the human that's inside, right? Like usually more towards the top of the mascot head. Mm-hmm. I think that's where people are supposed to aim, but he must have just caught him. And then the follow-up was not fun, right? You think it's over, and then that happens. I mean, mascots aren't just, they're not built to take shots. And fighters just get nuts, man. I mean, I don't know, especially with Conor McGregor. You put blame on both sides, but it could have been a lot worse. I mean, Google the Deontay Wilder one. That guy got it a lot worse.
You know, I remember when we first started covering MMA, Cub Swanson kicked us both in the leg, and we told him, give us a 2 out of 10, and that 2 out of 10 hurt. And so I learned a lesson that day. I knew I wasn't going to be a pussy and tell a fighter, give me a 1 out of 10. I mean, I guess I could. Okay, I ain't going to go over 2, that's for sure. You know? And when we went on a military visit, I won't give out the name, but one fighter was asked by military personnel, hey, give me a kick. Come on, come on. You know, I wasn't sure whether that was a great idea or not, especially after my knee injury. Fighter really wanted to do it. The other guy was okay. Nobody was looking. Yeah, you know, it's not like I can stop him anyway. So I go, give him a 2 out of 10. Well, trust me, that fighter's version of a 2 out of 10 was way worse than Coach Swanson's. I think some fighters are just clumsy or in the moment. They don't know. They don't care. You see what I'm saying? Like, you just can't have Connor doing that. They were better off just kind of like maybe give him a noogie or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I finally figured out who you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But there was one on the first trip that was bad too.
Was there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess the point of the story is just, you know, if you're going to involve an MMA fighter, just, you know, be careful, I guess, is all I can say. Look, This week we have PFL 5, 2023 regular season, and we have the heavyweights with Ante Delija, who is their defending heavyweight champion. He's in action. He's main eventing against Maurice Greene. And then we have the women's featherweights. They're not doing lightweight anymore. Kayla Harrison's out. They're going to be fighting. And we got Amber Lee Rock and Larissa Pacheco in the co-main event. So Aspen Ladd is back. Viaggio Ali Walsh is back. Hannon Fajeda is back. Jorgen De Castro, Julia Budd, Olena Kolasek. Should be fun, and you can watch that fight card on ESPN on Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern. However, I'll let you know that that same night is Bellator 297, so you need the two TV setup or a laptop and a TV, because this card's pretty sick, man. Honestly, bravo to Bellator. You got Vadim Nemkov defending his light heavyweight title against Yoel Romero. Sergio Pettis defending his bantamweight title against Patricio Pitbull Frady, who is trying to make history by becoming the first athlete, I think, in the major organizations to win 3 titles. Kind of like what Henry Cejudo wanted to do. He wanted to fight Volkanovski and become C4. Patricio wants to do something very similar. Corey Anderson versus Phil Davis in the featured bout. 2 longtime great light heavyweights. And then Daniel James against Gokhan Sarikam, 2 heavyweights that really, really can throw some heavy leather. So I think that's going to be a nice thing to get things started for Showtime at 9 p.m. Eastern. Watch Bellator 297. And then the next day is UFC Fight Night, Cannonier versus Vettori, middleweights in action. That's a great main event. The rest of the card's like, basically a typical fight night card, and no sense in getting into it, but I really like the main event there. So that's kind of what we have to look forward to throughout the week. Goes, yeah, any final thoughts on UFC 289? What's coming up? Did I leave out any news that you want to talk about?
I'm not too happy that Amanda Nunes retired, but bravo to her and props to her. She was a pioneer for the sport. She's done a lot for it, and she's done things that I don't know will ever get replicated. Mm-hmm. So good career. Congratulations. And hopefully we do get to see you again, though.
It goes 2 things real fast. Did you see Mayweather and Gotti, that whole chaos in mm-hmm. and out of the boxing ring?
Yeah.
Pretty nuts, huh?
Yeah, man. And, you know, like, I don't even know that you could blame Floyd Mayweather. Mm-hmm. Gotti just got crazy out there. But at the same time, it's like boxing. Like, when are you going to learn your lesson, man? Like, these entourages that come out are just bad news. Mm-hmm. Bad news that many people there.
Yeah. There was a disqualification, and then Gotti just went after Mayweather, and all hell broke loose. They traded blows, the teams, the camps inside the ring, and then apparently out in the back as well. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of video that pops out. Probably check it out on social media. But for now, we do have a story up on MMA Junkie. Went up a couple hours ago. And goes, just some quick thoughts. The featherweight division may be bye-bye. Do you agree with that? The women's featherweight division in the UFC?
I do. There's no point to it. You know, you can't even really go that deep at all with names for the division, let alone ranked people.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Okay.
Yeah, I hear you. As we were talking, I tried my best to find why Pinedo advances over Wade, and I couldn't find an answer. But I'll try and find an answer by Thursday, but they both finished up with 6 points. So we'll see. Maybe Wade just needs to find out and make sure all four athletes are healthy and ready to go. If not, I guess he'll be the first one to called in, or maybe someone pisses hot. Who knows? But I'd like to find out the answer. Both were 1-1. And both had 6 points. So I'm just wondering, why was someone's one win in the first round more valuable than the other? The only thing I can think of goes is, did he just get it done in quicker time?
Maybe, yeah, time.
Yeah, maybe that's the answer. All right, folks, we'll let you know on Thursday when we do our next show. Thank you for all your support here on the Junkie Radio Podcast. Don't forget, you can catch Goes and I on Spinning Backlink. We'll both be on Monday mornings or afternoon, wherever you may be. It's noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. The show's live on YouTube, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. We'll discuss and unpack some of these big stories with our colleagues. Tomorrow, I believe it's Dan, Tom, and Mike Vaughn. So catch us again, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Just come over to MMA Junkie, click the links there, or go straight to the YouTube page. You might as well subscribe to their YouTube page. Hit the little bell so you always know when we're on live. All right, until the next time. Go out and be a champion. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.